It's not that. Oh God, what was that horrible thing? That puppy monkey baby thing.
Yeah, puppy monkey baby.
No. Puppy monkey baby.
No.
A puppy monkey baby.
All right.
I freaking hate that thing, but you can't get it out of your head. That's the problem.
I know. I'd rather have the singing goats after that.
Puppy, monkey, baby.
No.
Oh, that Doritos dogs commercial that was filmed 5 doors down from my house at our local grocery store.
No.
What?
That's your supermarket.
It is. That's where I had my first job when I was 15.
Oh, well.
Was that store.
That's kind of cool.
We were also going to talk about the postal reform. You know, lowering the rates. Because I know last time we were talking about how compulsory postage lowered the rates. And actually, it's a much, much neater story than that. And the government, because Lynch just put out an article on Belgium, where they were going through the same thing, and they were comparing, because in 1841, when Britain lowered their postal rates, it really was a fairly interesting thing, because they had a choice of whether to make communication easier and draw their empire together, but it was going to cost them a bunch of money, because they were going to reduce the cost of everything. And so they decided to do it. Belgium put it off for about 8 years. U.S. put it off for about 4 years. You know, we went from 5 cents, and then we went to 3 cents after that. So we can talk about that, too. It was a trade-off between money and really building a better empire versus having money in the bank.
Oh, no, just that's sad, because that's not what it's like today. I don't think there's any politician alive that would put growing the empire over money.
Well, that was the big thing about the United States is, you know, we had it, like I said last week, you know, it cost 33 and a third cents to send a letter from Massachusetts to South Carolina. And that dropped to 3 cents. And in my opinion, you know, I did a little bit in the exhibit of it dropping to 2 cents. And the reason that it didn't drop to 2 cents, which would have been on par with the British, is because they had to pay the postmasters for their graft and corruption. Because they paid postmasters sort of political favors. They'd put them into the position of the postmaster.
So they skim a little bit off the top?
Oh, well, you had to pay them.
Man.
You know, it's interesting because the United States had, I forget what it was. I'm not going to do a correction or anything, but about one postmaster for every 2,300 people.
Okay.
And today we have one postmaster for, I believe, every 20 million.
Holy crap.
So, you know, you just had tons of them. And every time a president changed, you had all these congressional appointments that had to be approved of all these postmasters.
And you're a postmaster, and you're a postmaster, and you're a postmaster.
Well, it was interesting. It would have been interesting. And that's why I like Chester Arthur, he's one of the people who went against it.
So if the guy really wasn't your friend, you'd give him like a Chicken Alaska for a post office where there were like 3 people.
Yeah,
but they mailed no letters.
But the unfortunate thing is, if you gave him Chicken Alaska, he still pulled a paycheck. So it was
no. If you're a fourth class post office, you didn't. All you got was a percentage.
Ooh. Yeah, but there was some money. I mean, it's, you know, they had to pay their own expenses and stuff, so they got a little pool, and that's also why pen cancels come out.
If you weren't a big post office, there was assumed not to be enough work for you to get
right.
A paycheck.
Yeah.
So all you did get was a percentage of the sales.
Yeah, but that's a heck of a lot better than a hearty handshake and a thank you letter.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's a white elephant gift to the post office.
A percentage of zero is better than a hearty handshake.
Well, so you have this office you have to maintain and this location you have to take care of, and you get, what, 5 cents a week?
And you have
to live. Oh, no.
And you have to live there.
These postmasters, first of all, they didn't have to live there. That was the big thing. Second of all, they did get major amounts of money. This was a significant payoff.
Huh.
You know, it was hundreds of dollars a year. You know, back then, hundreds of dollars was something. And the politicians You know, they said, hey, I thank you for getting me the votes in Tungsten, North Carolina. How would you like to be the postmaster? You did a good job for me. And the guy goes, sure. Because the 2 cent, 2 cents, 1 penny in Britain was pretty close to 2 cents in the United States. So Britain ran it very, very, very well for 2 cents. We had to lower it to 3 cents. And the only reason that I could see anywhere is that it was for the payoff of these far, far, far too many postmasters.
So we had corruption.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that sounds like today.
What a shock. What a shock. What a shock.
That never changed.
The interesting thing that I always thought was that from 1800 to the Civil War, the inflation rate of the United States was zero. It averaged at zero. And that's pretty impressive. I mean, that's all the countries.
Well, didn't we just learn, too, that you're ineligible to be the vice president if you were associated with the Confederate?
Oh, yeah, that was at lunch. Mm-hmm. We were just... is the microphone on?
Yes.
Hillary Clinton, could Hillary Clinton ask Bill Clinton to be vice president? And the answer is... there is nothing preventing her from naming Bill Clinton as president. He couldn't serve as president if she got shot or something
like
that.
Vice president.
I'm sorry, vice president. Bill Clinton could serve as vice president. He couldn't serve as president, and there's nothing anywhere preventing
him. Why couldn't he serve as president? He can't be elected to a third term.
No, it actually says in the what we were reading, and it's based on the 12th Amendment and the other amendment, whatever the other amendment was, from Roosevelt. If you've served two elected terms, you can't serve anymore.
Well, it's generally presidents don't serve in any political office, period, once they've...
No. Grover Cleveland was very...
Yeah, but that's not today.
No, that's true. Mm-hmm.
I mean, today they just kind of go into retirement and give speeches for money.
And become multi-millionaires.
Give speeches. Well, they become multi-millionaires in the election process because they're corrupt. So
yeah. They could become postmasters.
Yeah. That's it.
Why don't we just do a podcast?
Okay.
I'm going to give each of you, next podcast recording, I'm going to give each of you a list of three words, and it's your job not to reveal what the words are, but to work them into the podcast.
Oh, we've done that before.
And whoever gets all three in first gets to turn it over and say, I win.
Whenever we used to go to parties, we would play a game to see who could get somebody to say a word first. And the word would be like moose or ocelot or something like that. And you would work it into a sentence. But you had to get the other person to say it. And so that was always a fun game.
Well, real quick, I hate to burst your bubble, but the last sentence of the 12th Amendment... but no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of Vice President of the United States.
It says that?
It says that verbatim.
Because the one that I...
because that makes sense.
Yeah, because the one that I pulled up said, constitutionally, it has not been decided yet whether a Vice President has to be eligible for presidency.
Well, that's just because no judge decided to make his own laws disregarding the Constitution.
It's never been a case to have been decided.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
But it makes sense because...
So it actually says that at the end?
It does. I'm looking at the 12th Amendment right now. So sorry to burst your billary 2016 bubble.
Oh,
but
man.
Damn.
Oh, what? You don't want Billary for 2016?
Billary.
No. You start over, new candidates.
No. I want Jeffica.
You want Jeffica?
Jeffica.
It's high school all over again.
Oh, dear God.
Why?
You know, that's getting edited out.
Who said that yesterday? Somebody brought that up.
Who mentioned Jeffica? Which, for everybody, Jeffica is Jeff and Jessica combined.
Because they're married.
Yes. Because they're married. So it's what we were called in the 11th grade by everybody.
Jeffica.
And somebody here brought it up. Somebody said something about it. Oh, she called him Jeffica. And now the person has to die. No, it's cute. It's okay.
You'd be without a job if I died.
Was it you?
It was you. Okay, let's count it down, yes. Jeffica. No, not you.
Hang on. Wait. Give me that. Where is it? There's one on here somewhere.
Count it down, John. Count it down, Dawn.
Why Dawn? I didn't know.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello there, this is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's a to send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, Order 66. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Dawn. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT, or you can call us and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher, and many more. This week, we'll be talking about stamp news, a $50 stamp worth 10 cents, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag leap year, Cash's corrections, and our expert topic this week is the top 10 lotto tickets that don't pay off. So, stamp news. U.S. stamp collecting is getting expensive. January was an expensive month for collectors of United States stamps. The Postal Service issued its first stamp to eclipse the $20 denomination, the 2295 Columbia River Gorge Priority Mail Express Definitive Stamp in a pane of 10. Also issued in January were the $6.45 La Cueva del Indio Priority Mail Definitive Stamp and a $6.45 La Cueva del Indio Priority Mail Stamped Envelope. However, the worst price tag this year comes from a simple coil stamp. Made available to the public on January 17th, most collectors are not aware of the fact that the 10-cent stamp featuring red pears could set them back at least $50 straight from the USPS. As advertised by the USPS, the stamps are only available in strips of 500 and in coils of 10,000. They are not available over the counter or from the fulfillment center in smaller quantities. This was verified at the Ameristamp Expo in downtown Atlanta the weekend of January 29th to the 31st. Customers reported that the clerks at the USPS sales booth at the show required a minimum purchase of a strip of 500 of the 10-cent red pear coil stamp. In the past, Stamp Fulfillment Services has sold stamps from large coil rolls in smaller increments, usually of 25 stamps. Collectors noticed that the fourth quarter issue of the USPS stamp catalog, USA Philatelic, no longer offers coils in strips 25. The 10-cent red pear coil stamp has a plate number beginning with the letter S and followed by six digits on every 27th stamp in the coil. Collectors who want to add this coil stamp to their collections must purchase 500 stamps. Put aside for a minute the $50 price tag. How many 10-cent stamps do you really need for postage?
Five.
Yeah, five. I mean, you could get rid of them eventually.
People have a hard time selling old 10-cent stamps at discount for face.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the question is, you know, could some... Well,
people are going to go in collectives just to buy this new stamp.
I have a thing for Cash's corrections. I'll stick it in now. On eBay right now, the La Cueva del Indio priority stamp, they're selling for $5 to $6 each. It's a $6 and, what, $6.95, I think it is. They're selling between $5 and $6.
Those are used.
Used. They are used and
645.
They are getting almost full face.
Wow.
Now,
okay.
It's early in the issue. So people want to get the stamps now. You know, in 5 years, I guarantee that price is not going to hold.
It'll be a dollar used.
Yeah, it'll be a buck or something. But right now, these stamps are going for monstrously high prices. And I did not find any of the $22.95s on eBay at all.
Wow.
Yet. Yeah, you know, here at PSE, we get stuff overnighted and stuff like that. So I expect that we will see them.
Eventually.
But the thing is, you know, when they get here, I guess we soak them off and put them on eBay as quick as possible.
Right.
You know, the markup on them is just huge right now.
Well, you know, the last one came out was the Arizona Memorial, and I've only seen maybe a handful of those come in, and we get express mail almost every day, and rarely do I see those used because a lot of times they're using up other old postage that they can get at a discount or inverted jennies or something like that. That seems to be much more readily available.
Yeah, we get mountains of inverted jennies.
I saw a package not too long ago, and I think it had like $50 worth of those stamps on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people are trying, you know.
They're paying for the insurance with the stamps.
Yeah.
The fortunate slash unfortunate thing here is that we get a lot of mail that has a lot of postage on it. The unfortunate thing is that we get it from stamp collectors, and they want to blow out their old issues, not the new stuff. They're not buying stuff for face from the post office.
Yeah.
They're buying stuff at 85% of face.
You know? 90 or 95.
90. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the latest, and I don't know how long this is going to last. I'm sure it's going to go up again. I think it's just a glut on the market. But right now, you can get a $2 Jenny sheets at 90%, sometimes slightly less. And you know that's not going to stay there very long. But, you know, right now you can buy a $10 sheet for $9.20.
It's a $12 sheet.
$12 sheet for, well, but my...
Say, what sheet are you buying?
For $10.90.
Yeah.
My math is wrong. I went to public school.
You're not adulting today. It's Friday.
That's it.
Time for hashtag stamp stories, hashtag leap year. This year is semi-unique because it is an even year divisible by four. This, of course, means that this year is a leap year in which we get an extra day tacked on at the end of February. So what does February 29 have to do with stamps? The next time you are thumbing through a box of covers at a show, you might want to keep your eyes open for cancels dated February 29th. Only available every 1,460 days. Leap day covers can be a desirable collection. There is a small following of collectors that seek them out, and oftentimes, collectors in general will snatch one off the dealer table just for the curiosity factor. There have been leap day covers found from the U.S. going as far back as February 29, 1880. The old ones can fetch quite a premium if you can find one.
An interesting note is that sometimes February 29th falls on a Saturday or a Sunday, particularly a Sunday or maybe a holiday. And so
no postal service those days.
Now you might not, it might be harder to find a current one than it would be from one in, say, the 20s or something when they did work 7 days a week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm curious. It says only available every 1,400 years.
No, 60 days.
460 days.
Oh, that's 1,460 days.
Yes.
I misheard. Sorry.
If it's every 1,460 years, that's really unique.
I just was thinking, what the heck? And I heard years, or I heard years, and I know you said days. Sorry.
Besides trying to find them for sale at shows or online, this year you can go the extra step and make one of your own to add to your collection. Simply make a self-addressed stamped envelope and take it down to your local USPS at the end of the month on February 29th and ask them for a courtesy cancel at the counter. Most clerks are more than happy to oblige. Do you have any leap day covers? Planning to make your own this year? Share them with us on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag SS. HT, hashtag leap year. Cash, What have you got?
What else have you got?
Since you've been doing Cash's corrections all episode.
Yeah. Hail fellows, well met. Sorry, already spoke about the Indio cover, and we haven't gotten a letter yet. The podcast went up on Wednesday, right, for the giving away the Mad Stamp. It's Friday morning. I haven't gotten a letter yet. Usually I would have thought that somebody would have sent one very quickly.
Well, we said we were going to give away two, right?
Yeah, but I wasn't. I wouldn't expect a foreign person to send a letter in one day.
But a local one should arrive.
Yeah, local you could have one day.
Watch, it'll be in tomorrow's mail.
Right. we received a great gift from Patrick Reedy from New York. Thank you very much. He sent us our name tags a month ago and really did a great job. He sent us little Stamp Show Here Today logo stamps. And there, we'll put them online and show so everybody can see them. It's the Stamp Show Here Today logo, except that there's a specimen, there's errors, there's a Balboa Beach canceled one that somebody was living under a bridge or something, an imperforated pair. But of course, the winners are going to be there's one with a chicken and one with a Hello Kitty. And so we want to. He wrote a great letter. We might put that online. Thank you very much. This is a really cool little item you made. It made us laugh a lot, and that's why we do the show. We really like this.
You know, the best part is I had to point out the chicken to Cash because he didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't even see the chicken. Well, there's like seven of them, and I'm going, wow, that's a lot of weird stuff there, and I didn't even notice the chicken. I noticed the Hello Kitty and not the chicken.
Go figure.
That's funny. I like the bluish paper one, too.
Yeah,
I like that one, too. That's pretty cool.
There's a bluish paper variety that he put on silver metal instead of gold metal. So that was very cute. Had a lot of fun there. And thank you very much. We have a lot of fun with it also.
I will say there's going to be one problem. We're going to fight over these now.
No, we're not.
I get the chicken.
And the rest are up for grabs.
And that's it.
That's it?
Well,
I did all the rest already.
I did the early one, and I was going to talk about postal reform, which I'll give a little thing. Postal reform today is a whole lot different than postal reform back then, and you've already heard it if Jeff doesn't edit it out. So that's it for me.
And now our expert topic. The top 10 lotto tickets that don't pay off.
Wah, wah, wah.
Oh,
we have one of those.
There we go. There it is. If there is one thing that we see over and over again here at Stamp Show Here Today, it is the sheer number of people who think they have won the stamp lottery. They find an old stamp on an older envelope from the turn of the century in great-great-granddad's trunk in the attic, and when they try to find out more about it, they come across a catalog entry that shows their exact stamp that says it's worth $11 million. As soon as they share the news with us, they find out that it might not buy them a new house or car. In fact, there are hundreds of millions of that exact same stamp in existence.
Oops.
They look at their stamp, and they look at the catalog, look at their stamp again, and think, it sure looks like my stamp. What happened?
Yeah, but the thing is, the images in the catalog, a lot of times only show the image and not what the edges of the stamp look like.
Well, but it's worse actually than that, is you'll go online and you'll see a 2-cent stamp, and the internet wants to have flashy stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are like once there's a 1-cent variety, and it's several pages away from the picture. But on the internet, they want that stamp that's several pages away from the picture, right next to the picture, because it shows it's worth $150,000. And everybody has a heart attack because it's a really super common stamp everybody has. who has a grandma who has letters someplace. And they go, wow, this is worth $150,000, and I got 20 of them.
We are going to go over our top 10 common U.S. stamp identification mistakes that we see and share some of our stories around our favorites, and also a few ways to maybe tell the difference in the future. So, by Scott catalog number.
What's number one?
U.S. number 10.
Cash's favorite stamp.
My favorite stamp, which is worth $200 versus U.S. number 11 that's worth $15.
So it's the exact same, forgive me for saying it, but it's the exact same image all intents and purposes, if you didn't know any better.
Yeah, if you were not a stamp collector, you would look at these two stamps and say, they are the same stamp. And we would point out they're different colors, and you would say,
how do you tell?
Who cares? No, you wouldn't say, how do you tell? You say, who cares? And again, this is one of the problems.
If you say, how do you tell, then you will be a stamp collector.
Yeah.
If you say, who cares, then you're not.
And again, this is a problem with the catalog. They list them in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
Date order.
Somewhat.
And so the more expensive one comes first and the cheaper one comes second. The people read the first one and say, oh, this is a $200 stamp.
Oh, they don't even go any further.
Keep reading and boom, you see the second one. And that one's $15.
Well, I think that's a flaw of the catalog myself, because they will have one image of a stamp in a specific color. And that will be identified usually with an A notation, A26, A27. Mm-hmm. That same image will then be used to reference a dozen different stamps. But it'll be in little tiny print with this variation on it. This is different. It's got this grill. It's got this secret mark. And that's not as clear of information as just the picture that you get.
Right.
So the common human person who's never dealt with the stamp catalog is going to look at that entry. They're going to see that entry for the number 10 that's tied to that image. And they're not going to logically go, what other stamps look like that? They're going to assign a 1-to-1 ratio. That catalog number goes with that picture. And that's it. So they have to have it.
Yep.
So the design number A140, for instance, would mean what?
Yeah.
That is the picture that is shown for the Washington head stamp with numerals for the value.
Mm-hmm.
And that is every Washington head stamp, whether it's 1 cent, 2 cent, 8 cent, 10 cent, 15 cent, doesn't matter. All of them, all different perforaties, all different watermarks. It doesn't matter. Printing, flat plate printing, rotary press printing, offset printing, it doesn't matter. It's A140.
Exactly.
And so when somebody calls up and says, yeah, well, I have an A140.
Okay, which one?
So anyway, number one, the difference between a number 10 and a number 11 is color. And if you're not a stamp collector, you know, it's orange brown versus
dull red
or something like that. And if you,
now,
who the hell knows?
Actually, if you get more technical, it's not just the color, it's
right.
The plate.
Right.
What plate was it printed from?
Right.
And you really just went over everybody's heads.
That's exactly. Actually, mm-hmm. Well, that's why it's the expert topic.
But yeah.
That's the actual difference between those two.
You know, I mean, philosophically, the average person that thinks they found that expensive one, you're going to lose them as soon as you say the word plate.
Well,
they've checked out.
It's more than that because,
well, but
you know, we're talking
number 10
about
number 10 is orange brown, but you can have a number 11 that is orange brown, and mm-hmm. it's an extremely rare stamp.
Yeah, it's worth more.
And so, I mean, it's not just color alone. You have to actually do the research and find out what plate it's from to definitively tell whether it's a 10 or 11.
And by the way, people, these are stamps. These are not just ones that we picked out of the catalog or whatever. These are stamps that are sent to professional stamp experts for certification. These are not like what if or whatever.
Yeah.
These are actual stamps that show up, and we get a lot of number 11s marked as number 10s. That's just the way it is.
I brought that up because the most expensive U.S. stamp is the 85C.
Yeah.
Z Grill, only 2 known copies on a 1 cent stamp.
85A.
85A.
Oh, 85A. Okay. 85C, something else. Strike that, reverse it. And I was going, well, why isn't that part of the list? Well, it's because we never received those as submissions, because
exactly.
That's finally one where people tend to know better.
Yeah. So number 2 is U.S. number 491, which is a 2-cent coil stamp. It's worth $800, but what we usually get is number 492s, which are worth a dollar. So the difference between U.S. number 491 and 492 is some very, very small detail in the design. So small that no one, if you held the two stamps next to you, there would be no chance of a non-stamp collector being able to differentiate the two stamps.
Oh, it's worse than that. If you gave somebody a magnifying glass and one of each side by side, it's worse than Where's Waldo. You would not find the difference if you didn't know what to look for.
Well, but we do see a lot of items submitted as 491. Yeah. Now, granted, they mostly don't go back as 492. They most go back as 454, which is the watermarked variety. Same type, but the watermarked variety. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just because the watermarks can be difficult to see on that issue.
So why don't we edit that and say that your $800 stamp is usually a 492 or a 454, which means that it's either a dollar stamp or a different dollar stamp. So number three, this is the one that we get a lot of. That's U.S. number 64, which is a pinkish color. It's worth $850.
It's not pinkish. It's pink.
Or pink. Versus U.S. number 65, which is worth $3.
And the color in the catalog says rose.
Which it actually and varies
over the place. There are a large variation in shades for the rose. The pink is early printing. It's very distinctive when you see it, but the problem is there's so many of those 3-cent stamps out there that finding one among all those 3-cent stamps is difficult.
And again, this is one of the problems, again, with the catalog. You're going through and you say, oh, there's the picture of my stamp. Ooh, it's a number 64. It's worth $850. You don't read down to the next column that has number 65 that's worth $3. And you get a lot of people saying, hey, what the heck? I went to San Diego once, and there was a person who had a, mostly it was postage, but they had a small collection, and they had four U.S. number 65s. And I had to give them a value on their collection. And I gave them a value of like $140, which was like 80% of face. And I didn't really add anything in for the 65s. And they thought I was a crook, because how could I offer them so little when right here there are four stamps that are worth $850 each? You know, there's over $3,000 worth of stamps. And I had to explain to them, you know, this isn't it. And they didn't get it. And so I left there, you know, not able to do anything, because they didn't understand that the next stamp is what it is, not that stamp.
Yeah, no, the mental process stops. As soon as you think you've identified it, you're done.
Yep.
Well, especially why would you keep going?
Especially when you see the big dollar amount.
Oh, you're really done.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, appraising is horrible. I hate having to do that, because there are so many. I've never had one, trying to think, maybe one instance where I didn't accidentally offend the person.
Yeah, it's really easy to do.
Because they're going to freak out and be upset. Well, this says it's worth this much. I'm sorry, you know. It's not. And how do you politely deal with that? It's really hard.
Now, number four, this one comes from stamp dealers and collectors. These are not really people off the street. 85C, which is the 3-cent Z grill, is worth $3,500 versus number 88, which is the E grill. They both measure the same. They are both different grill types. Nobody, except for the people who are really hardcore, understand the difference between the two, and we get a lot of 88s submitted as 85s. This is a little different because, again, you're dealing with stamp collectors. You're not dealing with people who don't know anything. This is just one that is so technical that even people who know what they're doing mess this one up.
And that can actually be said for any Z grill, E grill crossover.
What's the difference between a Z and an E, real quick, for people that don't know?
It's the way that the grill is oriented. The Z grill is a horizontal grill, and the E grill is a vertical grill. And I'm not talking about the rectangle orientation. I'm talking about the actual little tiny points that cut into the paper.
The little pyramids.
And they're very tiny, and they're very hard to see, and it takes practice to see them. And so it can be very difficult to identify at times.
So you're talking about the orientation of punched rectangles that are about a quarter millimeter across.
Correct.
Yes.
Being able to tell the difference. Yeah, I can see that causing difficulties.
Number five. Now we're getting into the big money.
590.
Number 594 is worth $10,500. Number 552 is worth 25 cents. The difference between them, Scott?
What? One's rotary press printing, one's flat plate printing. That's the big difference. They're both perf 11.
Doesn't everybody know that? Jeez.
And the design size.
And nobody understands this, if you're not a stamp collector. Nobody. They'll say, I've measured this. I measured it, and it's 1¼ inches across, and I put 1¼ inches into the converter, and it came out 22 millimeters, and this is a $10,500 stamp, and you just sit there and go, no, sorry, it's a totally different way of printing.
And that one's a really common mistake one, too, because the 552, they printed a lot of those, a lot of them, and it was common use on things like postcards, too.
Well, oh, yeah, if you find one, you won't find one. You'll find 100 of them. You'll find 50 of them sitting there.
I guarantee anybody who has postcards from their grandparents has a postcard with a 552 on it.
Yeah.
Well, the easy way to tell is on a flat plate printing, when you flip it over and look at the back, those sheets were actually stacked after they were printed to dry, and a lot of times you get little spots of color on the stamp. And so if you flip it over on a flat printed stamp, you'll see all the little specks of color in the printed ink.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same color that's on the front.
And on the rotary stamps, they dried as they went through the press. And so by the time they got to the end and got rolled, they were gummed and everything. So you don't get that ink offset on the back. And so if you flip it over and you see that offset, you know it can't be a 594. It has to be a 552.
So if there's ink on the back, it has to be a 552. Okay.
So you don't have $10,500, you have 25 cents.
If then, that's on a good day.
Yeah. Number six is U.S. number 361, which is worth $17,500, versus number 335, which is worth $2.50.
Now, which stamp is that again? I'm having a hard time picturing it.
That's the 5-cent Washington. Type okay. A140, by the way.
Yay!
But it's bluish paper.
Oh, bluish paper. Gotcha. Okay.
That's the one that has the 35% rag stock that makes the paper look a grayish blue.
Curse you, bluish paper.
Mm. Now, here's the hitch.
Here's the hack.
It's listed as being blue paper. It's a blue stamp. If there's any wash whatsoever, the paper looks blue.
Now, if you don't want to know, for those who don't know what wash is, they printed the stamp, and after they printed the stamp, they would wipe the plate. They would clean the plate of any excess ink. They would ink the plate, and then they would wipe off excess ink so that only ink was in the engraved lines. And if they didn't do a complete wiping, then they would have that, what's called a wash, over the supposedly unprinted areas of the stamp.
So it's like a real diluted coating of ink?
Yes. Yeah. So the paper would be blue.
It has a blue tint to it.
People, mm-hmm.
Well, you can find stamps of other colors, and you can see it, mm-hmm. but it seems to be most prevalent on the 5-cent bluish paper. People confuse it with the bluish paper.
And because of the dollars involved, obviously, they want to have a $17,500 stamp versus a $2.50 stamp.
Somebody had brought some of those in last week, actually.
Right. And just as a little thing for everybody out there, if you want to, the best way that I use, I mean, there's a lot of things, but the thing that I do first is I flip the stamp over, and I put it on a yellow Post-it note.
I use neon orange.
Actually, you want an orange. If you look,
I don't have any orange Post-it notes.
Oh, we have some.
If you look at go all the way back to kindergarten and look at the color wheel, you have three primary colors and three secondary colors. And if you look at the wedges, orange and blue are opposite each other on the color wheel. And so if you place it backside up on an orange piece of paper, it highlights the difference.
And what color is this bluish paper?
And it actually makes it look bluish when it's on the orange paper.
A little bit.
But if you put a normal one and a bluish one next to each other, the bluish one is significantly darker, and it becomes very obvious which one is which.
But
it's not
really a blue, it's a gray blue.
There's one, it's not dirt cheap, but there is a cheaper bluish paper variety of a stamp, which is
the
that
two
one.
Center.
No, he's talking about the 2 cent Lincoln.
Is it the 2 cent Lincoln one?
There's 2 cent Lincoln one, but also the 1 cent. The 1 cent's only maybe $40.
Yeah.
So you can pick. So that's a good reference to pick up for $40. You can go find yourself one of those.
The one and the 2 cent are actually fairly inexpensive. They're both less than $100.
Because of that, there's not going to be as much confusion. Yeah, just go Post-it Note Company makes a neon orange sticky note. So go get a $40 reference. You can use it to check right away, and once you have both of them, the regular and the bluish side by side on that note, you'll never mistake it again.
Number 7, we see all the time. Now we're getting into the internet. We're getting into, guess what? Do you have this? You may have won the lottery. Number 613 is worth $40,000, and number 610 is worth 25 cents. And this is the 2 cent black Harding stamp.
Oh God!
Now it is noteworthy that stamp comes rotary and flat plate. So you have 610, 612, are both one's rotary, one's flat plate. 611, which is imperforate, is flat plate.
Nobody's going to confuse that one.
And 613. So 612 and 613 are rotary. 610 and 11 are flat plate. And again, flip it over. If there's specks of ink on the black ink on the back underneath the gum, then again you're looking at a flat plate printed stamp, and you don't even need to worry about checking the design size. So actually they're generally misidentified 612, which is the rotary printing.
And I'll tell you from my experience too, any of these stamps where the difference is 22¾ millimeters versus 22¼, I'll look at it with a 10x loop, and it still takes me time to try to get that number. It's not an easy thing to see. It's not an easy thing to come by. So you're not going to have an easy time doing it by whipping out an elementary school style ruler and thinking you're going to get a correct number for size.
And I've seen so many people send me an email saying, look what I found, and they'll have a ruler with millimeters next to their stamp showing that it's the correct size. And you just can't tell from a scan.
Look, it's kind of between 22 and 23.
Yeah, you're trying to...
When you're talking about that scale of ruler, a lot of times those lines are half as thick as the difference that you're looking for. And that's just so that you can see them.
Yeah.
You have to use something with magnification, with extremely fine reticle lines to get accurate measurements for these things.
Number 8, this is another one, not so much from the internet. This is another one where it comes earlier in the catalog. U.S. number 5 is worth $75,000, and U.S. number 7 or 9 are worth $150 or $185. So we're still in pricey items here. But a number 5 comes in the catalog before number 7. That should be clear to everybody who's listening. So they go through and they say, number 5, wow, this picture matches. This is the $75,000 stamp. Let's start planning our trip to Cozumel.
When these stamps were printed, this particular design is the 1 cent Franklin. And they were printed in plates with 200 subjects. You have 100 on the left side and 100 on the right side in panes of 100. And only one position out of those 200 positions was the type that produced Scott listed number 5. So that tells you, first of all, that it's 1 in 200. and that's when it was printed. The survivability plus the number of printing plates that they had, it was only one plate out of 11 plates that they have that the stamps were printed from where that position existed. So that's how rare the stamp is to begin with, and then to find it having survived and in good condition to collect it, even much tougher. But a lot of those types came from all from the same plate. So in my mind, they should be one issue and then sublistings, but the catalog for so long has listed them as major listings, and in the early days that was probably to promote sales of more stamps. But tradition has left them like that, and I think that a lot of times does disservice to collectors. But yeah. Another soapbox for another day.
And you know my soapbox is right there next to yours because I totally agree with this.
I mean, to clarify for people that don't understand about plating was how, before they got into color varieties, how they picked their varieties for some of these older stamps. And if you don't know what you're doing, it's microscopic specs and changes to the design itself.
Well people, today stamps are basically laid out on a sheet by computer, and every image is the same. And but back then they did it all by hand, and so each one of them can be slightly different depending on whether it was completely done or partially done, or
The person was cutting a frame line, and left stamp, he put a little more pressure at the top than at the bottom,
or he dropped his tool at one point and made a little mark.
Yeah,
yeah. All sorts of things. Or maybe he put a scratch where they're across the plate where it shouldn't have been. A lot of these things are highly collectible for the specialist, but really they shouldn't be.
They blow the beginner away.
Yeah.
They do, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to give you an idea, there are novels dedicated to 5s, 7s, and 9s.
Yes.
And telling the difference in how to plate them. It is not a beginner's topic at all.
Yep.
It's actually a boring topic for an expert, too.
Yes.
Okay, here's my favorite stamp. Number 9 is number 316. It's worth $115,000. It's usually confused with the number 300, which unused is $11 and used is 25 cents. And the reason I gave two prices there is because number 316 is supposed to be mint. People walk in all the time with them used because it's an incredibly common stamp.
316 is a very, very rare coil. It was, you know, and it was basically the government experimenting to see if coils would work for the vending and affixing machine companies that wanted coils. And so not a lot of them survived. And, 300 was produced in the millions.
Billions.
And
copiously, yes.
And it was also produced, not only was it produced in sheet stamps, but it was also produced in booklet panes. And so you have these different formats, but the coil stamps weren't collected back then initially. And I think we talked about that in the recent episode.
I had our last coil episode. My favorite story on this is a family came in because they just thought they had won the lottery. And they had a stamp collection, and it had this stamp in it. And he, the fellow, had gone online and seen something like the top 10 most valuable stamps.
Oh, Lord.
And it showed this 1 cent Franklin stamp. It showed a coil stamp. The perforations are missing on the top and bottom. He didn't understand that the perforations were missing. He didn't look at the perforations at all. He looked at the design. And then he went into the book and said, I have that stamp. So he came in, and it was so funny because he had wrapped the stamp up in this big ball of toilet paper to preserve it. And he unrolled the toilet paper.
The suspense.
And, you know, we have here at PSE, we have this front room where we meet the public. And then we have our back room where we actually do work. And, you know, it's kind of a security area. We don't want people walking around stuff. And he came in and said, you know, can we go into the back? You know, this is really something big. And I said, let's just sit down here and see what you got. And so he brings out this roll of toilet paper and he unrolls it and he pulls out this terrible looking 1 cent Franklin. And he goes, look. And I looked at it and I said, that's not even worth 25 cents because it's so badly damaged. And then I had to teach him about what a coil stamp was. You know, the one he saw was missing perforations and this one has all the perforations around it.
As but I recall, you said it was actually missing a quarter of the stamp.
Yeah, too. It was missing a big chunk of the stamp. It was, it had been hit by a truck and, you know, just really... But he thought that he won the lottery, and I hate it when, you know, you have to say sorry. You know, you're not going to buy a new house. You're lucky if you buy a stick of gum.
Yeah, if that. Yeah. I mean, to give you an idea, I have like 1,000 of those at home used in all ranges of qualities, conditions, and centering.
Yep.
That I got for like $50, $60.
Yes. You overpaid.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably. And the last one.
I hate this stamp.
And this is a biggie, because this one is the one that everybody shows on the internet. Number 596, worth $150,000, versus number 632, that again is worth 25 cents.
There's a guy on Facebook from Romania that frickin' trolls me with this stamp. I'll be minding my own business, and out of nowhere, this picture pops up that he sends me, and I've told him 12 times, that's not it. It's just this one freaking stamp with a little millimeter gauge next to it. He doesn't even put any text with it. It's just a picture of the stamp, and it drives me nuts.
Again, this one you're dealing again with 0.5 millimeter.
It's design size. It's design size. Now, one... thing with 596 and 632. 632 comes in a range of shades from deep green to yellow green.
Oh, and yeah, going back, this is one of those really super common 1 cent Franklin stamps.
You're talking about coil waste versus regularly printed sheet stamp. And 632 comes in a range of colors. 596 is pretty much one color because it's so rare. And anytime we get one of these in, the first thing I look at is it yellow green? And if the answer is yes, then the answer is it's going to be a 632 because 596 only comes in the green shade. And I mean, there's a number of other things where experts will look at something and say, and they can tell it's not a rarity because of the shade, or it is a rarity because of the shade. And, you know, we catch a lot of fake coils that way. And, you know, it's just the wrong, it's a common shade for a sheet stamp, not a shade that the coil stamp was ever printed in. And so that's one of those where 632 comes in a nice yellow green and 596 doesn't.
There's a tool that you can use if you're a, you know, a growing or average collector that I tried recommending to my Romanian friend, but he didn't listen to me. The U.S. Precision Gauge.
I recommend this thing all the time.
It actually has on it a stamp-sized box. It's got 50 different tools on one gauge. It's awesome. But it's got this one, if you look, it's the only one that actually looks like a rectangle box of a stamp with nothing in it. And what you do is, if you don't know if a stamp is rotary or flat, you get your magnifying glass out and you put it underneath this gauge. And you line it up looking at the magnifying glass.
With, you don't I think even it's need a magnifying left. Glass. You line it up.
Well, these people want to be precise, though.
Okay. Here, but it's easier. There's a little gauge. You line the corner up.
The top left corner, yeah.
And then there's a black line on the bottom in the left. If it touches the black line, it is what it is. And if it doesn't touch the black line, then it's the flat plate. It's really easy.
Rotary touches the fat black lines. Flat doesn't. That's all it is.
That's it. So you just line it up. And as long as you can line it up, I mean, which is really super simple. I mean, all you're putting is lines on lines. If it touches the black, I don't care what the millimeters is. You can measure it, and it can be 22. You know, you get some micrometer out there or something. It's 22.386. I don't care. If it touches the black line, it's it. If it doesn't touch the black line, it's not it.
It would save a lot of people a lot of headaches. It's like $12 on eBay.
Oh, I don't even think it's that much.
And you can there's so many things you can use it for, too. Yeah. That's one of like 30 uses that I use that thing for.
It is, but Now, just back to that 596. The devil, the dimensions are what determines 596.
Mm-hmm.
The color is just a easy weed out mm-hmm. feature that that we can use to say this is not it.
Oh, there's a lot of them on this list here where, you know, you can tell the stamp from across the table that it's yeah. wrong. It's the wrong color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of these guys, you look at it and they go, look what I have. You know, back to the 64s, the 491s, the 361s.
The 10.
The number 316s. You know, they're...
Well, one that's not on your list is 461, mm-hmm. which is a lot of times is imperfect stamp with fake perforations.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... You can weed out a lot of them because it's a specific color, and you look at it just the wrong shade, right. It's not going to be genuine. But yeah, I mean, you verify it by examination, but
yeah,
it's
this,
the first clue that just says
this list, none of this is fake stuff. You
yeah.
don't have to worry about any fakes. You're not getting fakes, you're just wrong.
Misidentifying.
Just misidentification.
Flat out misidentified. So, but on the good side, if you want a stamp stamp collection that's worth $400,000,
uh-oh.
Go out and find a number 11, number 492, number 65, 88, 552, 335, 610, 7, 300, 632. Put them in the wrong spots, and you will have a $400,000 collection.
Oh, good grief. Don't listen to what
no,
Cash
won't.
Says. You'll have a $400,000 lie.
Mm-hmm. You can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website www.stampshowheretoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
This is Eric Jackson. I sell revenue stamps, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today!
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
Return to sender. Address unknown. No such number.